on. This is Ken Jones for KBOOS News in Depth.
Michael Barton, a person with a history of mental illness and obvious dementia, died in the Oregon State Penitentiary after catching what seemed to be a simple case of the flu. As his condition worsened, nurses and medical staff at the prison repeatedly dismissed his pleas for help. While the Department of Corrections' review of Mr. Barton's death called it a systems failure, Disability Rights Oregon concluded that part of that system failure was attributable to a nursing and medical culture that dismiss the needs of patients with disabilities. Join me on Prison Pipeline as we discuss the investigation of the death of Michael Barton. That's Prison Pipeline, August 19th at 6:30 p.m.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM.
To you, the all-night driver out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up. It's Labor Radio.
Radio. Hopefully we are live on the air right now. Having some tech. Okay, cool. I think that we are live to you, Portland. This is Labor Radio. I'm your host, Michael Cathcart. Joining me as always is
Elliot Gilliland. Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, absolutely. And we are live here on KBOO with Labor Radio. Before we jump into our main stories for tonight, just want to give a very hearty shout out to all the folks who came out and defended our city and our community here over the weekend. As anyone who turns on Fox News or anything else may know, Portland was the scene of a massive clash between anti-fascist protesters and a bunch of Nazis who came to the town, the Proud Boys and all the rest. And it got a lot of pretty insane attention from national figures, including politicians like Ted Cruz and all the Fox News crew, and even the President of the United States. A lot of misinformation out there, but one thing that is absolutely true is that the folks who were out there, you know, all the Portlanders that went out, they did a great job repelling, you know, the essentially outside invaders coming in, you know, people from all around the country trying to spread harm and violence. And so we want to give a big Labor Radio shout out to all the folks who were there and defended Portland, and hopefully we don't have to do it for too much longer.
Yeah, and we did not have a repeat of the concussion grenade. I believe last year it was, that, like around this time, that someone was hit with a concussion grenade in the head, and luckily they had a helmet on. So I didn't see anything like that happening again. And I think, too, if people are interested to learn more, the YouTube channel Unicorn Riot, they have people on the ground, you know, in kind of press gear and things like that, interviewing people on the scene, and at least trying to kind of take a non-biased look at what's going on. So I highly recommend checking out Unicorn Riot if you guys are interested in learning more about kind of what was going on the ground.
But anyways, we will move on because this is Labor Radio and we are always running out of time. So the main story, or one of the few main stories we want to talk to you about tonight, a couple weeks ago, on August 7th to be exact, there was a coordinated raid of 7 poultry processing plants in Mississippi. ICE raided all of those facilities and in total arrested 680 people. some of whom were undocumented, but a lot of them were not. The majority of those plants were owned by a company called Koch Foods, which has no relation to the Koch brothers, even though that's a name that you don't hear all that often. But a third of the people that were arrested, a third of the 680 people that were arrested at a Koch food factory in Morton, Mississippi. The town of Morton, Mississippi is about 3,000 or 3,600 people, and so that's about 10% of that town's total population were caught up in this raid, were arrested by ICE.
Which is a crazy number.
And so there's a lot of horrors that took place there, including, you know, it was the first day of school for a lot of kids, and they came home from their first day of school to find an empty house, you know, front doors locked, and their one or both parents had been taken away. You know, that's not only is that horrifying, but it's also something that you would not, that you would hear, you know, you would read in the history books about what happened in, you know, under the Nazi occupation somewhere, but not something that you would expect to happen in the United States. But of course, in this era, we are dealing with this on a regular basis. But specifically at that Morton plant, at the Koch food plant in Morton, Mississippi, you know, so ICE came in, they raided, they arrested a bunch of people, and they did not do anything to the ownership of that company. There were no charges pressed against the management or anyone arrested who, you know, was part of the management group, the ownership. And it seems to be kind of a trend, because, or at least a coincidence, because just last year, Koch Foods settled a massive class action lawsuit, a $375 million lawsuit with their workers that have been going on for 8 years over discrimination charges from about, I believe it was 11 employees that brought
that together. Sexual harassment, I believe, is heavily involved there too.
Yeah, so it's, you know, sexual harassment, discrimination. There was even, you know, talk, or there had been attempts to form a union, and that was part of the retaliation that they received, and that's what they were claiming was discrimination.
Yeah, and I think it's really interesting to kind of point out the coincidence there, because it's not the first time that raids have followed basically complaints about working conditions. So plants in Salem, Ohio, and also Morristown, Tennessee, were both raided following disputes. And last year, for example, OSHA basically fined Freshmark, another meat processing company similar to Koch Foods, over $200,000 for three separate incidents in which proper safety guards were not in place in a Salem meatpacking plant. And a week later, it was raided by ICE. So basically, plants where unions are active are basically being targeted by the corporations at ICE, right? So this is just clearly not a coincidence. ICE is being used as a hammer against basically activists who are trying to improve the conditions for workers in kind of a working environment that we've not talked about recently, because, you know, we've been discussing a lot of kind of tech and how workers, you know, across, you know, white and blue collar are, you know, all workers. But in this case, these are literally working conditions in which, you know, similar to the animals that are inside of them, these workers are not being treated properly. And again, that's another discussion to be had.
But. Right. Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, so it does seem to be a trend that has, you know, you cannot directly link one to the other, you know, unless there's some sort of leak of a paper trail. But it seems pretty clear that in instance after instance, you have uprising or resistance or, you know, pushback from workers in an industry that is overall, it's a pretty grueling industry, mm-hmm. very low pay, a lot of dangerous and unsafe conditions for people to work in. When those workers push back, when they either try and unionize or when they try and bring in, you know, the labor department cases against their
or
managers.
Or just safety.
Or, yeah, just even OSHA complaints.
Yeah.
There are, or even just talking to their managers, raising concerns with their managers. That is seen by management as, you know, quote unquote uppity. And then fairly quickly after those types of actions are taken,
we see some selective enforcement is what we're kind of looking at here, right? Exactly. So, you know, why aren't the companies being penalized for hiring these workers without status, right? It's basically exposing, right, the truth that capitalism is okay with exploiting workers until they would also like some of those profits that they help generate, right?
Right.
So it's kind of a classic conundrum for labor radio. But it's really unfortunate that that ICE is basically wielded in this manner, right?
To
discriminate and selectively enforce against groups of people who are basically have no ground to stand on.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, just for reference, from March through April of 2019 of this year, there were 11 employers that were prosecuted for hiring undocumented workers. But during that same period, there were more than 120,000 people prosecuted for illegal entry or re-entry into the country.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it is more difficult for a case to be brought against an employer by the government if they're thought to be hiring undocumented workers, because they have to prove, you know, because you have to knowingly be hiring those workers, and so unless there is a paper trail to be found, it's harder to prove that they were in fact, you know, quote unquote, knowingly hiring them.
Yeah,
even though it's pretty clear.
And, and the Trump administration is not going to punish people for this, because then they wouldn't come forward, right? And that's right. Not the position that they're taking right now. So, you know, as we kind of backslide, which backsliding might be a theme on this show, it'll come up later.
Yes,
but as we kind of backslide, right, into this space where the administration is basically taking out a lot of edicts that Obama kind of put in place, they really have no incentive to punish a company for coming forward, because that's exactly what they want them to do.
Exactly. And yeah, I mean, so this is a pretty bad trend, and you know, we've seen it as Elliot just mentioned. We've seen it happen in different, you know, to different companies in different cities, time and again here. And so it's something to keep an eye on, and it does sort of speak to the larger collusion between, you know, a very business friendly, business oriented, anti-worker government that we have, you know, the current government in charge. And the continued exploitation of these companies, of the workers by these companies.
Yeah.
And so it's a mechanism that these companies are using to continue to instill fear in their employees, and to keep them docile, or to keep them, you know, keep them with their heads down, for threat of, you know, bringing in the federal authorities, whether that be ICE or other organizations,
and just institutions in general. If you're scared of the police, right? You're a first generation immigrant here, then you're probably afraid of your teachers.
Yeah.
And you're probably afraid of all of the other people in which your parents are dealing with on a daily basis and are scared of, right? So this is basically, I think, a good place to maybe stop on this topic. But these raids have huge, long lasting effects on communities, and especially the lives of the children in them, right? And you talked about how at that Morton plant, it was basically, what was the percentage?
It was like a third of the yeah, population of that.
Yeah, yeah,
like
right.
That,
so you know, things like that, yeah. That's going to affect a community for decades, right? This isn't just going to go away, right? And they're punishing, really, in reality, this administration is punishing the people trying to improve themselves and their families, and not the companies trying to improve their bottom line.
Exactly. And it's, you know, one thing that I just found interesting is that it's the same crime, the same level of crime to seek employment as someone, an undocumented person in this country, as it is to hire an undocumented worker knowingly. And yet the prosecution rate of one versus the other is just so lopsided that it shows, you know, it's part of the larger climate of fear and hatred and terror that this administration is putting forward towards immigrants, and all the fear mongering that's happening around immigration, both legal and illegal, in general.
And the fact that corporations are people until they don't want to be.
Yeah, exactly. There's you know, all the positive sides of being of personhood.
Yes.
And none of the, you know, all the internal benefits and none of the external costs, which is sort of a larger tenet of capitalism, it does seem. So yeah, I agree. It does seem like that's a pretty good place to leave that story. You know, it's an awful place to leave that story, but it is the place that I think we can leave that story now. But, you know, shifting just slightly over from there, along, you know, the same lines, talking about the Trump administration and their
backsliding.
They're backsliding, their general hatred or general animus towards workers and labor in this country. The Trump administration last week on August 14th, they put forward a new proposal through the Trump administration's Labor Department that would essentially green light workplace discrimination for federal contractors, for companies or organizations with contracts through the federal government. And so this would... They are now, you know, they're using the single exemption that does exist, the religious, you know, the religious liberty exemption, and basically just blowing that wide open and saying that if you can cite in any way, you know, any way, how minor it is, that you have a religious objection to hiring anyone of, or yeah, if you have a religious objection, you are allowed to essentially bias or discriminate against workers on the basis of race, ethnicity, national orientation, or sorry, national origin, sex, LGBTQ status, and other characteristics. Which, you know, that's something that has existed a lot in the rhetoric of the Republican Party, and particularly of the Trump era Republican Party. But to take this step, this next step towards really favoring religious freedoms over individual worker freedoms is
pretty insane. I'm hesitant to call it dog whistling just because it is so not subtle.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think these are terms, and you know, these are things that people understand what is really being done here. And so, I don't necessarily know if it's dog whistling, but again, the ambiguous nature of these, you know, proposals is not a coincidence. They are built that way because it allows contractors and subcontractors and agencies to basically act however they'd like, and also it reduces their legal risk for discrimination, right? So at the end of the day, everything here is going exactly to plan. This is what they're looking for, and again, it's really unfortunate, and it's a theme of today of backsliding.
It really is, and it's a pretty clear attempt to pander to one of Trump's, the strongest element of Donald Trump's base, which is the evangelical community in this country. Because, you know, for years, that community has really been pushing, and particularly like the business interests within that community, have really been pushing to loosen restrictions around discrimination, particularly around the LGBTQ community.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is clearly a gimme to that element of Trump's base, and to that part of the American population.
The National Center for Transgender Equality said in a statement that the rule could allow firing or refusing to hire someone because of their sexual orientation or gender identity, and it could also lead to federal contractors refusing to hire women or unmarried workers who are pregnant or parents, or even discrimination on the basis of race.
Right.
So I think that's really important to call, because I think when a lot of people are thinking about these issues, you know, they're thinking about minorities or minority groups and things of that nature, but right in there, right, like you, a single mother, they could basically say, I'm citing a religious exemption here and we won't hire you on the
right
basis of basically your sin, right? So that to me is just, along with everything else that, you know, the National Center for Transgender Equality is talking about there, is, it's really unfortunate to see from a government organization and not a private one.
Right, like you would expect this from certain individuals, certain employers, but to have it be sanctioned and become official rate and policy through the Labor Department, through the federal government, is the exact opposite of the direction that, you know, the moral arc of our American history has been bending, and it's pretty sad to see. And you know, just to add to how ridiculous how naked their pandering to the evangelical community is, or just how naked this discrimination really is.
Mm-hmm.
The reason that they're citing, or at least the argument that the Labor Department has put forward for why this is necessary and why this is a good thing, is basically they're saying that it's going to save contractors and therefore taxpayers money, because they will not be bogged down dealing with legal expenses, you know, fighting court cases.
I think this is just, so I saw
ridiculous.
That too, and I thought that was so unfortunate. I think that is just, that is a byproduct of that people don't care anymore,
right?
And they don't even read press releases, so people can just write whatever they want in there and they're not even going to get backlash, because to me that's basically admitting defeat.
Yeah.
It's admitting you don't have an argument. I don't know. I'm kind of at a loss there, because that is just truly, it's unfortunate.
Right. Like, let us discriminate and therefore it'll save you money.
And it'll
because
save
why,
money.
You know, if we aren't entertaining lawsuits based on discrimination, we're going to save money.
Yeah.
Which is just, yeah, it's basically giving away the whole game there. We're like, yeah, we.
The Labor Department is created to make money, not.
Right. Yeah, the Labor Department is not there to safeguard the protections around workers. No, it's there to save taxpayer money. That's the goal of the Labor Department.
Yeah, you know, and then even doing this too, it's another example of just basically the government kind of taking the collective bargaining power away from labor, because, you know, during a lawsuit too, you'd probably suspend the work that is currently being done there.
Right.
So if you can't even bring action against these agencies or these contractors, then you can't even really pause their work or you know, threaten them with any sort of kind of revenue based approach there, because you can't even bring the action to court.
Exactly. Yeah. And you know, there are certain circumstances where the employees are still able to bring discrimination cases, you know, the case to court, but the Labor Department is no longer required to back them up or to enforce any of the regulations. Yeah. As long as these businesses can cite some religious claim, which can be almost anything, it does seem, you know, like what, there's no strictures around what types of religious claims are accepted and what aren't. And so it's basically, if you can prove that you have some religious moral objection to something, then you can discriminate. Mm-hmm. Which is, it's pretty upsetting. There is one positive, though, and that is that there will be, once this is officially proposed or on the table, there will be a 30-day public comment period during which, you know, anyone in the public can comment on it and leave, you know, basically leave their feedback. And this actually, you know, although it does seem futile, like it did with the FCC and other things, this actually did have an effect on derailing the Department of Health and Human Services plan to protect or provide protections, official protections for healthcare providers who refuse services to folks on the basis, you know, particularly contraception on the basis of religion. When that was proposed by the DHHS, the Office of Management and Budget basically said, okay, but we are requiring you to disclose the feedback that you receive from the public. And it was so overwhelmingly negative that they were like, okay, you know, we step back. Like the DHHS pulled back their bit of regulation because of that, or their proposal because of that. So once this does, if and when this does go live, if there is if you are able to provide public comment and to push back against it, it may actually have an effect. So keep an eye on that, and please do provide your dissenting comment to that. And so we are going to move from that onto a more positive story, which is talking about in the last week, maybe a little over a week, the folks, you know, you may have heard of the podcasting and media outlet The Ringer. They talk usually about sports and some pop culture, headed by sports writer and former ESPN commentator Bill Simmons. Mm-hmm. The workers at that media company just announced they are forming a union and joining WGA East, the Writers Guild of America East, which is an affiliate of the AFL-CIO.
Yes.
66 of the 90 employees at that company signed union cards, and pretty quickly, in fact, after they did that, management voluntarily decided to recognize the union. You know, what that really means is yet to be seen, but that's a positive first step.
Definitely.
Yeah.
It did come on the heels of kind of a little bit of the Barstool Sports president kind of making a fool of himself on Twitter, basically calling out his staff and saying that if anyone tries to form a union, he would fire them.
Yeah.
Which is, of course, extremely illegal.
Very illegal.
And honestly, it was kind of just a very strange Twitter meme for basically an entire day.
Yeah. I mean, he essentially, like, so Barstool, for folks who are not extremely online, Barstool Sports is another competing sort of sports-oriented media outlet. And they, you know, upon hearing the news of what the Ringer staff was doing, the folks who were already unionized under WGA from other media outlets reached out on Twitter to workers at Barstool saying, hey, if anyone there is interested in talking about how to form a union, under WGA, talk to us. You know, I'd love to talk to you about that. And the president, who I forget his first name, but I think his last name is Portnoy.
Yes.
I mean, he's, you know, he's a pretty big MAGA guy himself, but he basically said, yeah, if anyone does this, you are fired immediately. And then he continued, even after being called out on it, he continued to double down.
Yes.
Basically to the point where not only politicians, but also labor bureau had to call him out and say that's illegal.
Yeah, I mean, it's extremely on brand
for
Barstool Sports. I think them, along with kind of the SB Nations of the world, are basically built on the fact that they're exploiting youth labor a little bit, right? Like, I think their business model is built around kind of building out these localized, very specific sites, right, for individual teams and different things like that, in which they either don't pay at all or pay very little to the people working there and kind of just burn them out. Right. So it's basically like kind of a churn and burn type situation. So again, I think it's extremely funny that these right wingers love structural change when they benefit capital, exactly. Like right to work laws, or the SCOTUS, the Janus decision, which hurts again collective bargaining power for labor. But when it comes down to like market corrections that favor labor, it's always the market smart, workers dumb.
Right,
like the market is going to stop right,
every
the,
time.
The Ben Shapiro kind of things like that, right?
Facts don't care about your feelings.
And what we're really talking about here is wage stagnation, right?
Right.
And the loss of benefits that labor has fought for and won over the last 200 plus years, right? So the market clearly needs correction, but they're completely unwilling to engage in any sort of pro-labor legislation at all, right? So why do people have to take on multiple contractor Uber jobs, right, and an SB Nation thing, right? It's because they can't earn a living wage with just one, right? So from 1973 to 2013, hourly compensation of a worker rose just 9%, while productivity actually increased by 74%, right? But the middle class is shrinking, and we're actually debating whether or not Amazon workers should take pee breaks.
Right. Yeah.
So
whether or not they deserve to have a bathroom break.
Yeah, exactly. And I think Portnoy here is really missing the thread on this entire discussion, and he just wants to keep paying people nothing at all, right? So the typical worker has received less than 1.5% annual increase in real wages since the 1970s. But I'm sure it's not a systemic problem, right? It's just the market.
That's just the market correcting itself.
The market's right as always.
Yeah,
so,
I mean, the visible hand.
In the marketplace of ideas, we will solve all solutions. I thought this was a very funny thing because, on a day that should have been something good, right? The Ringer staff joining WGA was kind of not ruined, but
it was definitely overshadowed.
Because,
I mean, that, like, it got to the point where he was having a Twitter spat with Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who called him out for basically engaging in illegal labor practices. And one thing that I did think was just sort of ironic was that he, I don't remember the exact quote, but he basically, in response to people, because he was essentially trolling all of the left with this, and anyone with a heart, and in response to someone, I don't remember exactly what it was a response to, but he basically said, in our world, and this is, I don't approve of this language, but he did say, in our world, unions are for wussies or for pussies or something like that. I don't remember exactly what he said, but essentially, I think that it's pretty shocking considering that he built his entire empire, his entire media empire, off of basically exploiting or profiting off the exploits of unionized athletes, of leagues full of unionized athletes, and very mm-hmm. some of the strongest unions in the country.
Yeah.
The NFLPA, the NBA Players Association, MLBPA, like, those are some of the longest standing and hardest fought and strongest workers' unions in the country. Mm-hmm. And he built his entire empire off of basically exploiting their work and profiting off that. And then he turns around and thinks that unions are bad in his world. And it's like, no, I don't think that's true.
Yeah. And I think that's why it's really interesting to see what Bill Simmons does, because I think if people here listening also listen to The Ringer, you'll know it's a pretty leftist site.
Yeah.
And Bill likes to have a swell little leftist time on there.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that the kind of those feelings, that he has, especially about, paying college athletes, for their services and selling of their jerseys and all the things that the NCAA is doing that he doesn't agree with, that I hope he compensates the people who work for him and have helped generate all the good content that they make. So
agreed. And it's one thing to talk about it for him, in the comfort of his living room and his podcast. Another thing when he's confronted with it directly. And so we'll see how that works, how it actually plays out. But congratulations to the folks at The Ringer. One series of media companies, new industry or new economy workers who are realizing that they are part of the working class, and in fact realizing that in order to receive protections and to continue to have good jobs, they do need to unionize. So it's very exciting, and we hope to see even more of those types of companies and more workers in different types of workplaces unionizing like that.
Yeah. There's been a ton of tech victories around, and we're running out of time, so we might not get to it too, but I think it's important to call out. Basically, there have been some kind of bills put forward that would also help some Uber contractors be identified as employees too.
Yeah.
So if people listening want to check that out, this would classify them not as contractors, which they currently are, and give them access to certain benefits like healthcare, overtime, and the ability to unionize, which they currently don't have.
Right.
And I think, as I was talking earlier, these are the types of people who are being taken advantage of the most because they can't sustain themselves with one job. And as a contractor, you aren't eligible for healthcare or anything like that. And a lot of people, aren't prepared to deal with the financial ramifications of being a contractor. So, taking money out for taxes and paying your own healthcare, if you're on COBRA or whatever.
Right.
And so these are really big battles that are happening. And, Uber is from what I was reading, paying some of their drivers to actually protest the bill.
Yeah, I've seen that too.
Yeah, and it basically a manner that is very, very similar to stuff we've seen before from different tech companies. So,
right. Well, with that, we're going to have to leave you. Thank you again for listening to Labor Radio. I have been Michael Cathcart.
And I'm Elliot Gillan.
Yeah, until next time, have a great night.
Thanks.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Feminist Film Night and Planned Parenthood fundraiser on Friday, August 16th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater in Portland. This Planned Parenthood fundraiser will screen A Girl Like Her, which tells the hidden history of over a million young women who became pregnant in the 1950s and 60s and were banished to maternity homes to give birth and surrender their babies for adoption. And Jane, an Abortion Service, a documentary of Jane, the Chicago-based women's health group who performed nearly 12,000 safe illegal abortions between 1969 and 1973. There will be a conversation after the films between a former Jane, Judith Arcana, and a girl like her, Lonnie Jo Lee. Again, that's the Feminist Film Night and Planned Parenthood fundraiser on Friday, August 16th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration.
Baby, you understand me now. If some